In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Welcome to the Bearcast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by Indeed, Pepsi, and BetOnline. Enjoy the episode, Cal fans. You're now joining part two of this podcast.
You know, looking forward, as we look to, you know, taking sort of what we can from this game, how do we measure up against like what's upcoming on the schedule? I think, you know, if you look at what you saw from Chase and that kind of progression is, as you say, Rob, maybe an opening of the playbook, to me it was more about the receivers kind of than it was about Chase himself, and that we just started to see some receivers flash in ways that we haven't seen. Like seeing a receiver have the game that Kakoa Crawford had, dude, that's like a Keenan Allen game. Like literally Keenan Allen had that game this weekend in the NFL. Yeah. Just way better.
Yeah, 100 yards in the first half.
But that to me is so exciting to get that on our third down efficiency was incredible to see that type of confidence, to have confidence that we were going to convert on third down. I liked what we were trying to do on offense. We ran a lot of random plays for like minus yards, like where we would run these short routes for negative 2 yards that were really perplexing to me. But then the flip side was we would have some solid gains on first and second down that would put us in third and manageable. It reminded me of what Sonny Dykes said. It's like the whole entire basis of the air raid is to just set up positions so that you can get first downs quickly and easily. And so that completing those passes instead of throwing it, we're obviously leaning more on the run. And I think, Rob, that's what we wanted. We wanted to see more of a balance in an offense, but we just haven't. I don't know if it was the O-line being out. It just sort of seemed like we ran out of effectiveness, if you will. And so as we go forward, it would be interesting if we get those offensive linemen back. Can we play a very Stanford similar style this week, you know, this Friday, and run a game plan that is 50-50, if not more, majority run, and see if we can kind of beat down the Stanford defense over time? Or is it something where, you know, we're going to need Chase heroics to kind of win the game? I'm not totally sure, but it is an interesting, as we look kind of forward to what is ahead of us. And then facing Oregon, I do have a fair amount of confidence that we're going to be able to put up some points, move the ball. And that's exciting because, you know, 3 years ago, we were really struggling with that.
Yeah, I think it needs to be said, too. General rule of thumb for any like young player on the offensive line is if I remember hearing this correctly, is that run concepts are easier than pass pro. Right. Because you're being forced to move up. And just like your assignment is going to be, that's the guy you're blocking and you're sealing him out to the left or right. And like, and you're pulling and you're going to the second level and that's your thing. Like it's much easier to learn the run concepts rather than pass pro and the shifts and like who to pick up and how to blitz protect and how to like shed guys like off to your next dude. Like I've heard that running is a lot easier. And so we have this question, from someone who's watching a live stream. Said, did we throw any running back screens to get the ball in the hands of our playmakers with some lead blocking? Seems that could have countered OSU's D shutting down our runners. But I think that's the point, is that we had so many young guys on the offensive line that just native running plays and like just normal running plays were easier to make sure that they limited their mistakes versus trying to get them to run out and do a screen blocking scheme. Like it's rough on young guys. So I think that's why we might have ran a bit more than we wanted to. I know it definitely felt very much like Sean McVay's like first year with the Rams, right? It felt very much like we're just gonna run the ball run the ball up the middle, run the ball up the middle, run the ball up the middle until you sell out to stop the run, and then we're going to just play action you to death. Yeah. And that kind of felt like what we were trying to accomplish, except the fact that we didn't have our Todd Gurley. We didn't have a guy that was gaining 3 to 4 yards every time he touched the ball on runs up the middle, right? And then so it was clear that we weren't going to gain those yards. And then by the time we tried to play action, they already knew it was coming because it was 3rd and 8. Like, they knew we had to pass on this. And they knew even in I formation, we're just going to pull the ball and run out. And even if we handed the ball off, they were selling out to stop the run anyways, that we were going to get stopped. And that's exactly what happened for the majority of the game, outside of those drives where we started out passing the ball, right? Where we started off passing on first down and on second down and throwing and keeping them honest. You know, we talked about what Trey talked about last week, right? Which is the corners are going to sit on your routes if you don't attack them deep and keep them honest. And what do we do out of the gate? We fire deep, like just out of the gate. That's like one of the first things we did, is we started throwing those deep balls to Kakoa, to Makai, like just down the field, 15, 20 yards down the field, and just forcing them to back off our receivers off of the line. And that was effective. And we hoped that would open up our running game, but it clearly did not. But then we really diverted to, we're going to try to work our, we went pass first to run, to open up the run. And then it started working. And then we're like, oh, okay, that means our run's effective. So we're going to try running to open up our pass game again, which did not work. But clearly we tried to keep doing that. And that's the confusion to me, where it's like, we know what was effective in this game. Why did we go away from it? And it's that turtling thing that, you know, the three of us have already talked about, and a lot of the writers have talked about. And Nick is an adamant person against this, which is just, in a game where you're only up 7, you can't afford to be conservative. Because if you give the ball back, this is college football, like anything can happen. And it's exactly what happened. Like, we go 3 and out, and then it's just, they have the ball and they score. Like, it just does not make any sense why you would take the foot off of your gas pedal when you're only up by a single score in a tight game. And so I think, but that we've seen that year after year with this program over the last 4 years. And that's the thing that, you know, I'm going to hate myself for saying this, but that's one of the things that I miss, I guess, about the Sonny Dykes years.
Wow.
No matter what the score was, he was always looking to score one more.
How the tables have turned.
Turntables have turned.
That's not entirely accurate, because if you do, like, I'm with you, Rob. I'm with you. But, like, we have to appreciate that Sonny had his fair share of turtling as well.
True. Like the surrender punts, I under, yes. I get. Yeah, I totally get. I'm, yeah, 100%. And I'm going to say also, there's also that caveat of, there were a lot of games where he had to score, like the Texas game, because the scores were so close. You had to keep scoring. You could not keep your, you could not take the foot off the gas pedal at that point. Like, you had fully committed to blowing your engine just to get to the finish line. Like, you had fully committed to that. So I understand that aspect of it. But that's the one thing I miss, is that we don't have that cutthroat type of, like, ruthlessness, like, when it comes to our offense and our willingness to do so.
Right. Yep. There was no I swear, like, this horse is dead and we're beating it over and over again. But I do just, like, I'm with you, man. I think that was my one. I agree with you entirely. So going back to the question that was asked, when you think about getting downfield as an offensive lineman, you did not really see our O-line doing that well. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is why the screen, like, I mean, what was I calling for? Yes. Like, I was calling more for screens against UCLA, because, like, you can one, see how UCLA sets up screens so well against us, and, like, Chip Kelly's a master at it, but also just because their defense was selling out. So, like, those type of plays would work well. And we didn't do any of it. And then in this game, you know, I felt like Oregon State's defense, they kind of sold out on the blitz. I think the Drew already called out the most important part, like, play of that game, though. Oregon State sends everybody Mekhi Polk's wide open on the right hand side, and Chase airmails it by about 10 yards, or maybe it was five, but in my mind it was 10. But that's it, man. You just gotta, those are the moments you gotta capitalize on. He was wide open. It was the ball game right there. And it didn't happen. But it's a tough book to read. It's a tough book to judge. All the circumstances have been completely not normal. And so I refuse to make a call on the offense that is anything other than we're still playing wait and see. But this was a game where you started to see some confidence build. And I would have liked us to play further into that confidence. And I felt like we kind of ran away from it when it mattered most.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Drew?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, again, we're kind of going, I guess, in circles on the offense. But, I don't think that this is a Musgrave issue, and I'm hesitant for people to do that. You know, going back to what Rob said, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what Bo Baldwin does at Cal Poly, because I do think that Wilcox has more influence over the offense than people think. You just see it from 17 to 18 to 19, just have it become more conservative. You know, kind of as the defense became more elite, you know, I think that basically they didn't want the offense to lose games for them. And so, you know, the second half turtling, I'm more inclined to think that was a Wilcox decision to go out and run the ball and try to have one of those drives at the end of the game where, you know, you take 8 minutes off the clock and just run the ball and score and put the game out of reach because it's just demoralizing. So I'm hesitant to put this on Musgrave. I do think that if Cal wants to take the next step as a program, they just need to take more risks on offense.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think we kind of saw that at least in a small version of it from the UCLA game to this game, right? Is we're taking those deep shots now. Like we're letting Chase rip it like 40 yards down the field, which I don't know if that counts as risk, but at least we're seeing them gamble a bit more. I think the biggest positive for me that I'll take away from Musgrave taking over, and particularly seeing from the UCLA game and this one, is that we're seeing a lot more young guys play. Like everyone is being given a chance. Like Monroe Young has been here for 2 years, and granted he's had some injury issues, but he caught his first pass against Oregon State. His first career pass was in this game against Oregon State, right? We saw Damian Moore, who's a true freshman running back, basically become the starter for the game, right? He was arguably our most explosive runner, and he leapfrogged Dancy. He leapfrogged DeCarlos Brooks. He also leapfrogged his other freshman running back, Chris Street, who arguably was the better recruited talent. So there's a lot of young guys that are playing, like Moela Iosefa played I'm looking through this list. Trey Pastor played. Who else? Elijah Maharo played. Ancelados played. Like, an actual snaps at their respective positions, not on special teams. So I think that's the cool part, is that we're seeing a lot of young guys being inserted and being allowed to play on offense and on defense. And they're kind of given somewhat clean slates to be able to play. So that's the one positive that I saw over this. And yeah, I'm excited to see the young guys. That's a big part.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely a nice silver lining. Although I will say it is shocking how different looking Tattersall is compared to Evan Weaver. They are very different sized human beings. Evan Weaver's single right arm might be able to eat Evan Tattersall. I was like, oh, all right. This is what happens when you don't have an all-world linebacker that just makes every single tackle every game.
He had a really nice stash, though. Like, did you guys notice that on stream? Or on TV? Like, when they showed Tattersall? Like, I was like, oh, wow, you got a real good mustache going for you, Evan. Like, that's a solid mustache. Oh, well, I think we've, as Andy said, we've beaten this horse dead enough, and we probably battered it to all seven levels of hell. So let's talk about Stanford for a little bit before we close out the night. How are you guys feeling about Stanford? I mean, we glanced on it a little bit, you know, as we were talking and talking about moving forward. But Drew, like, what do you think about the big game coming up in this, in these extraordinary times?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, 2020 weird season. You know, the big game usually I feel like is kind of won in the trenches. You know, you kind of see it every year. Whoever wins the line of scrimmage kind of wins the game. And, you know, the offensive line situation for Cal, I think, you know, is probably the most important storyline. You know, they did step up to the plate against Oregon State, but in a rivalry game against Stanford. And Stanford, you know, their bread and butter, what they try to do is just beat you at the line and try to, you know, force their will on you. I mean, so I don't know what the situation will be next week, but I assume that, you know, again, we'll be without 4 out of 5 of our starters. So, you know, they're going to have to step up big time. I think, you know, that's the difference between winning and losing. I do think that we need to keep an eye on the defense. I think if they play like they did against Oregon State, you know, I think we need to start talking about the scheme and the whole DeReuter sermon thing, which I wanted to talk about, but we didn't get time tonight.
Wait, talk about it. Talk about it. We'll create space. We'll create space.
Yeah. There are some questions from fans, which kind of have to do with it. So we'll talk about it when we get to that.
Okay. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking going into the big game is the offensive line and how they respond.
Andy, what about you?
It's our game to lose. Stanford's looking awfully pedestrian. So there isn't much that they've been able to do that well this year on offense. So I agree, like, if the defense can clamp down a little bit, avoid those kind of bigger plays that they've given up in the first couple of games, then, you know, this becomes a really favorable game for us.
. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to Comscore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring, and you only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a shortlist of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. That offer is valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. And that means you should be getting ready for the big game this Friday with a nice can of Pepsi Cola. Right, Rob? Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching.
Would it suck to lose the Axe in the third game of the season, in a season that's probably not going to be finished? Yep. Would it be on par with 2020 so far? Absolutely. So once again, kind of riding the put your expectations to the side, but you know, it's a toss-up game. Vegas is saying it's like a toss-up game. I think it's our game to lose realistically. It's our first game at home, a little bit more calm for our dudes out there, you know, just that are not having to travel and worry about whether or not the game's going to be played, those type of things. And another game where the offense has an opportunity to kind of open up. So we'll see. I mean, Stanford's pass defense is 72nd in the country. Like, come on, we got to take advantage and, you know, hold on to the axe for a second straight year. I think if you said, and if you, I'd be curious to get your guys' thoughts, that if we were going to lose to Oregon State, get blown out by UCLA, beat Stanford, and then lose against Oregon and lose against Washington State, and then maybe we'd take it. You know, maybe we would. I don't know. I think I would. I don't really care about anything else. Just keep the axe.
I would take it and run in a season that didn't matter. If we're not playing for anything else anyways, like we could go 0-7 really, and we'd still make a bowl game. Like it's still possible, right? Because there's no restrictions on the bowl game win-loss number anymore. So yeah, if I would take a 1-6 in a 7-game season, that doesn't mean anything, sure. And if, I mean, that if that one meant keeping the axe. It's, yeah. Like, we talked about it so much. Like, if we give up just one of those explosive play touchdowns in the first quarter of the game, we still win this game. Like, that's how close this game was. Like, it wasn't, I know people are like, we shouldn't be even, like, close to Oregon State. But, like, it was. But it also came down to us, like one single play determined the outcome of this game, basically.
We also have like selective memory when it comes to Oregon State. Like this historically, we have a hard time with Oregon State. We just do. Like Oregon State isn't necessarily the best. It's not a blue chip program, but we have a hard time with it. And just seems to be the way it is. You know, it's like the same way I look at Washington State and I'm kind of like, you know, we've owned Washington State. I know it's a new head coach, but I look at kind of that and you're like, all right, there's a program that Wilcox has shown that he has dominated, or even Washington, who he won't end up playing.
Well, we have a couple of fan questions that I'll get to. So let's go with that and then we'll close out the night. We got a couple. The first one is from someone who's watching us right now live. It says, in the two games Cal scored only 7 points in the second half, what do you think they can do to reverse that? Is that mostly play calling? Anyone want to tackle that?
Yeah, Drew, take it. Mr. Offense is fine right here.
So, I mean, UCLA, I mean, honestly, you have to throw away the tape. I mean, it's Musgrave's first ever game with less than 48 hours to prep and no spring ball. So, I mean, it's just throw out UCLA, you know, Oregon State. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that when Saffel got injured, our running game wasn't as effective. I mean, we were running the ball pretty well in the first half. And we haven't gotten a chance to give him a shout, but Marcel Dancy, I thought, played really well and had some really nice runs. And I like the way he plays. He plays hard. You know, we definitely do need to take more risks. But I mean, honestly, I think the offense is fine. I think if you're worried about Musgrave, you shouldn't be. You know, you need to give him more time in a normal season. And then we can start to debate. But, you know, he's new on the job in COVID with highly unusual circumstances. I mean, you just can't knock on him for that.
I think he's right. I think the best comparison I think I could make is that Musgrave's offense would need to be at the level of Andy Buzz's defense for him to be fired after one season, and not even a full season, like a 6-game season. I don't think it's at that level. So
Bro, we are not firing anyone, by the way. Anybody, unless there's some sort of disaster that happens inside of the program that's outside of football itself.
Right.
There's no way. The school is already making so many cuts. There's teachers on furlough. Like, students, you know, this pandemic isn't going away. No one's getting let go. And so if you're already, what Drew said, save yourself the stress and just enjoy what you're seeing and take note of the things that you like. And then if there's things you don't like, just be like, eh, there's a lot of things I don't like about 2020. Maybe I'll just store it in that category and move on.
Yeah. We have some other general questions here, but this is a fun one. This is a question that's pretty fun to end on, so I'm going to leave that. But I want to get back to Drew's thing, because that's the reason we brought him on, and we totally did not talk about it, which is the defensive play calling and his concerns. I'll begin to say that I think there's legitimate reasons for people to be concerned. And I'm not telling people to be concerned. I'm just saying if you're watching the game and you're concerned about it, your reasons are valid. But for my personal opinion, it's two games into a season and we're giving Musgrave the benefit of the doubt on all of that. I think we should easily do the same on the defensive end. Now, are there things that can easily be changed and adjusted to make this defense better? Absolutely. The biggest thing we saw against UCLA was that open field missed tackles were an issue. We could not finish off plays to save our life in that game. That kind of changed in the Oregon State game. We definitely got better at swarming to the ball, finishing off plays. But even with that, there were a lot of play calls that were called where we would call zone defenses against, you know, them running a three wide out set. And we'd have like two guys sitting back in zone with no man to guard. And so we would lose. We basically lost two defenders on those plays. They were just sitting in their zones with nothing to do. There were also times where it didn't seem like our defense was like set across the board. We didn't know what we were one doing or one anticipating what they were trying to do. So that goes into game planning and the play call in itself, right? Which is, you know, how coaching works. So those are my two issues that I saw that could be rectified, but we still have a few more games to see if they can be. But Drew, you have a strong opinion on this, so I want to give you the floor.
I do. We might need to do a whole nother pod. you know, so going back to how you said that we are giving Musgrave the benefit of the doubt, we should give Sermon the same. I completely disagree. I'm holding Musgrave and Sermon to two different standards. And here's why. I mean, Musgrave, he's new on the job. You know, I know there's very high expectations for college football coaches, but you need to be realistic in that even if this were a 12 game season with spring ball, with fall camp, it would probably take three or four games for the offense to actually start clicking. Just realistically. Meanwhile, you know, Peter Sermon, you know, we don't talk about the Sermon DeReuter dynamic enough as Cal fans. And it kind of baffles me because, I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it's highly unusual. I mean, you kind of see his rise from within the program. You know, 2018, he was an inside linebackers coach. Then in 19, he gets promoted to co-defensive coordinator without the play calling duties. And now he is co-defensive coordinator with the play calling duties. Meanwhile, the guy who was responsible for him transforming Cal into a god-awful defense and creating elite defenses in 18 and 19 that we haven't seen, I think, probably since those late 90s teams, you know, he's still in the building. You know, he's, you know, gotten demoted twice, you know, while Peter Sermon has been promoted a couple times. And I think, you know, who knows what the real reason is, but, you know, the thinking is that, you know, DeReuter is an excellent defensive coordinator. He's probably going to get poached either from, you know, an elite program who has the money to pay a D coordinator some real cash, or he'll just go back into head coaching. And, you know, so we'll groom Sermon you know, into the play calling duty. So when DeReuter leaves, it'll be a smooth transition. And, you know, it's college football. You're going to lose good coordinators. It's just part of the deal. And I don't think I've ever seen an elite coordinator get demoted to groom the next guy. Like, imagine if like Tedford at Oregon didn't take the Cal job and Mike Blair was like, oh, now you're co-offensive coordinator. And then he stays again. And is like, oh, now you're the co-offensive coordinator, but you're not going to be calling plays anymore. It's just unusual. And, you know, I do think Wilcox is an excellent coach, but I mean, to make that decision to take the play calling duties away from DeReuter, you know, it does open up a little bit of criticism, and it, you know, he's putting his name on the line when he does that, I think. And then couple that with Sermon comes with a little bit of baggage as the chief play caller. He was, you know, not the defenses at Mississippi State and Louisville, where he was only there for one season each. They were not great. And when he got promoted, I mean, Louisville fans and Mississippi State fans were on Twitter like, oh, good luck with this. Kind of like, I mean, like, imagine if like Andy Boo got like promoted somewhere else, like the things that we would say, and it's like kind of on the same level. So, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is when you get promoted like that, and meanwhile, the guy who's responsible for turning the defense around is getting demoted and still in the building, you know, it raises some questions. So you need to hold him to a high standard, because I mean, that's what we need to expect. If there's someone that good that can replace DeReuter, I mean, you have to think that there's something special there. And I mean, the first, I won't talk about UCLA because I don't think it's fair to him. I mean, he had less than 48 hours and to prepare and going against a Chip Kelly offense, that is a pretty tall order. I mean, their offense is, you know, kind of conducive to less preparation, I guess you could say. But, you know, like the thing that I liked about DeReuter is he always found creative ways to put pressure on the quarterback. You know, it wasn't like we had a bunch of guys that would just, it's not like we had a bunch of Aaron Donalds or Cam Jordans up front, but we were able to get to the quarterback and make them uncomfortable. And that's how we were ultimately able to get so many picks. Like, I guess just one game that comes to mind is the 2018 USC game. You know, there were a lot of sacks against JT Daniels where it was just good play calling. Like Evan Weaver would come on and delay blitz, sack him like in important times. And, you know, I'm just not, the quarterback's upright too much, or the quarterback was upright too much against Oregon State. And, you know, when they are getting beat downfield, it's not like the corners are getting beat. The corners are doing fine in man coverage. It just seems like, you know, our guys aren't in the right spot. And, you know, we are one game, or we're two games in, but really in my mind, we're one game in because you have to throw UCLA out. So I don't think we need to draw any conclusions necessarily, but it's something to keep an eye on at the very least, because, you know, again, when you make a decision like demoting DeReuter a couple times, promoting him a couple more times, it draws some scrutiny. Because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I guess I'll stop there. I'll stop with that rant. Well, you guys chime in.
Andy?
So, I mean, I think it's interesting. It's an interesting point. It's super speculative. And I think that's where you lose me a little bit with it is, it takes a lot for us to say something like Tim DeReuter was demoted, where, you know, he's been, you know, we have no idea what the communication is internally. And as someone who's worked with the program, I cannot tell you the difference between what's actually happening with the football program and what a fan's perspective is. And so it's hard for me to understand or to say that Tim DeReuter, you've been demoted two times in a row and we're elevating somebody else. If you're in management, or if you're trying to coach someone that's a leader, you want to give as many people the ability to move up in that organization so that you can maintain talent. So I don't know if DeReuter is allowing this so that they can keep that talent and keep somebody like Sermon motivated and excited to come to work every day. That would be, you know, just as easily plausible to me as the scenario, Drew, that you outlined. And as I sort of look at the evolution here, it's like we're allowing past historicals to play a much bigger factor here than we are with somebody like Bill Musgrave and using very similar arguments. And I know, Drew, you went out of your way to kind of talk to that at the beginning, but I still don't think it totally absolves that reality here, in that you have somebody that's taken on it. To me, it's much more about what you've lost than it is about scheme or calls and so on and so forth, because I think there's bias. And ultimately, like, when you look at losing somebody like, you know, Hawkins, like, Jalen was so critical. Like, that's what I look at, is like, you put Elijah into a new position at safety. You're replacing Ashton Davis and like Jalen Hawkins, who are both in the NFL right now. And then on top of it, you're taking away your all world middle linebacker, or linebacker that was just like, you know, the captain of the defense. And you've also lost some people on the D line as well, and in transfers, and losing Luke Beckett definitely hurt. Luke Beckett was a big player for us last season, and losing him is absolutely in a position of need right now, being our D line. Like, that one hurts. And we also lost Tevin Paul. Like, he was really good too. Like, and there's been a bunch of guys that have kind of come through and been that edge rusher for us. So it's really hard for me to point at that and be like, oh, that's an area that we need to focus and be concerned about, and there's demotions going on. You know, DeReuter is getting looks as a head coach. So I think it's smart to just continue to promote from within as much as you possibly can. We saw, you know, our favorite positional coach move over to the Miami Dolphins in GA. So we know that people are looking at the program from a defensive standpoint and saying, hey, there's talent there and we should potentially poach it. So as you're doing that, I think it's a matter of, okay, how do I do agree. Like, I think absolutely they're trying to protect themselves in case of loss, but I also don't see this as slights against DeReuter. There's no possible way that Wilcox, being younger, is telling a head coach with more experience than him that he's going to continue to demote him to bring somebody else along. In the same way that I don't really buy that Wilcox is coming into somebody like Bill Musgrave and being like, hey, I want to run the offense this way, and by the way, I'm going to call these plays in your second game ever in the most important possession of the game. Like, it just doesn't, those things seem to fall out of the world of reality with me. And so some of these things to me just kind of exist a little bit outside of the scope in which, where I'd like normally would view Cal football. I'm not trying to dismiss it entirely, because do I think it's something that's interesting and a unique point? Absolutely. But that sort of my perspective is one of, there's just a lot of conjecture and I try to kind of avoid that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the point being made about being speculative, that's what I'm trying not to do. Actually, I'm not trying to speculate, because you're right. Like, I don't know what's going through Wilcox's head. I don't know, you know, what, I don't want to speculate. Like, I'm not in the program. I don't know what I'm saying. The point I'm more trying to make is that from the outside looking in, you know, it draws some very valid questions. You know, why would you roll back responsibility? I guess I won't use the word demotion, but roll back responsibility of the guy who called the plays, who turned around the defense. So I guess I won't speculate. I'm trying not to speculate. Sorry. I guess it's more from the outside looking in, it does raise some questions. You know, I think when you talk about it being an issue of who you've lost, I think that's what I was trying to say, is that I've been impressed with the replacements. I do expect that there will be some drop off, because, I mean, Evan Weaver, Jalen Hawkins, Ashton Davis, you mentioned Luke Beckett. I mean, those are all very solid players and kind of irreplaceable. But, you know, the guys that replaced them, I've been impressed with. So, you know, it's not like they're getting, you know, beat deep and making rookie mistakes. To Rob's point, you know, some of the calls, I mean, they're just kind of sitting out there with no one to guard. And, you know, I think the other thing too is like just bringing the pressure. I haven't seen the same creativity. And again, it's one Oregon State game that I'm looking at, so it's kind of hard to draw conclusions, but he didn't dial up the pressure like DeReuter did, you know, in some of those games where we just absolutely shut offenses down. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not trying to speculate. You know, that's the last thing I want to do. But, you know, it does raise some questions because it is unprecedented, you know, rolling back responsibility from, you know, a very solid defense coordinator who's going to get looks from top programs to be their defense coordinator, might become a head coach again.
Yeah, I mean, valid. I think it's all interesting, and you know, as we sort of go forward, I agree in, you know, appreciate Drew the idea of like kind of like spotlighting it and making listeners aware of sort of that transition that exists. But you know, along those same lines, it's a matter of, do we have faith in? I think you're talking to like Rob. We've had a pretty unique lens into the Wilcox coaching philosophy and where things sort of how he views things in leadership and management. And he's done an amazing job at basically erasing any doubt in my mind that that man knows how to lead a program. So I think what you're also going to come up against is, you know, there's definitely a large amount of faith, I think, that we have in him making sort of the right decisions and having those right conversations in order to set the program up for success. And it would just feel out of character, but I can't definitively say that's not possible because you never know. You truly never know. But it would feel counter to sort of what we've come to know as the Cal program as it is today.
Yeah, I think, you know, to Andy's point, I think the one we had the chance to sit down with Wilcox, not just us, but a whole bunch of media to do like a football 101 session with Wilcox. And one of the questions that someone asked him was about in-game play calling, like when to go for it on fourth down. Right. And if I remember correctly, his answer was something. And I'm paraphrasing here. It was something along the lines of like, well, we'll talk to the analytics guys and we'll talk about like if we should be going for it here on fourth down or whatnot. And he'll give the general direction to the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator about what he wants to do. Like, I want to be conservative here, or I want to be, you know, like let's shut them down. Let's blitz them. Or, you know, on offense, it's like, all right, if we get the first down here, like let's try and go for the end zone on that first play. Right. Like things like that, just general big picture. Like, this is kind of how I want the game flow to go. And, but he also did say like ultimately the play calling itself is left up to the coordinators. So I think they're both valid points. I think there are questions that people can definitely bring up about Sermon's play calling that has happened. But I also, as to Andy's point too, like, don't think that any of these decisions come just from the top, because we talk about like when he first hired Baldwin and he first hired DeReuter, like those were two guys with head coaching experience. Like he's a first time head coach bringing in two coordinators that have head coaching experience. Like I'd be hard pressed to say he didn't hire them to be able to lean on them for their advice and for some direction. And so if that's the case, that if that's the reason, a reason that he brought in those two guys, and we're talking about DeReuter here specifically, I don't think these decisions are made without his consent. Like, I don't think that room happens of like, we're going to switch Sermon to play calling duties and we're going to move you to game planning, which is kind of what they talked about in preseason or spring ball last year when that switch was made. So like, you know, it could be that, you know, DeReuter, and this is speculation, right? Like, DeReuter wanted to give up his play calling duties. Like, he wanted to take a step back. There's a lot of ifs that could have happened in that decision making. But I think the one thing that I think Andy, you can agree with this, is, you know, judging from all the conversations we've had with these coaches, the one thing for sure is that it wasn't a one-way decision. And it was definitely something a bit more of a collaborative decision to go in that direction. But is that the right direction that was made? And was it a correct one? We'll find out soon enough. Like, we'll find out in like the next like 8 to 10 games, right? ending this season and then going into next year. And then, you know, we'll have Drew back on the podcast next year and we'll be like, you know what? You are right. You are absolutely right. This was not a good move. Otherwise, we might have Drew back on here. We can be like, Drew, we told you. We told you. We told you, Drew. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think that you'll be able to come to any firm conclusions in 2020. 2020 will definitely be a much bigger indicator, for sure. I mean, this is just a wonky season. But, you know, kind of to your point, like, you know, you both being able to actually sit down with Wilcox and kind of know his philosophy for leading a program. You know, again, I don't want to speculate at all. There might be very well an explanation of, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And then, you know, I drop it. But that explanation hasn't been given. So I think that he does need to understand the optics of it from the outside looking and looking on paper, you know, kind of what people are thinking. And, you know, I think a point too that I'm trying to bring up is, you know, we don't really talk about that enough. I think it's kind of an afterthought, and I guess I'm trying to highlight it a bit more just because it's such an unusual dynamic. I don't think I've seen it before. Maybe correct me if you guys have, but I personally haven't.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the only argument I can make to that is that Wilcox doesn't care about the optics of what other people do. As long as it's a win on the field, like for him, I think that's all that matters. He could care less about what people think of him in the program. I mean, for crying out loud, like for season ending injuries, like we had no idea what it is. It's upper body or lower injury or lower body. Like, you know, we don't get any specifics about that stuff. Like I think it'd be hard pressed for us to get any of that. And you can clearly tell from like press conference and stuff, like that's all he cares about is like the wins and loss. The man doesn't even have a TV at home. Like he eats, breathes, lives football. Like, I don't think, I honestly think he doesn't care.
Doesn't he have like the same car that he had in college? I thought I read that somewhere that he has like a 20-plus-year-old car.
He might be one of those guys too. I would not be surprised.
If, he takes the bartender work, right?
Yeah, I think he lives in Berkeley, so he might just like walk or run to his office. Who knows? Maybe he does the Deadford thing where he has one of those like cots in his office, and that's where he sleeps.
Tedford slept in his office way too much.
And since I did my undergrad degree, can I also give a shout out that Wilcox, Musgrave, and Sermon all went to Oregon? We never talked about that either.
Yes. Yes. The Oregon connection. The Oregon connection and the Washington connection is pretty strong with this coaching staff right now. But yeah, gents, we've been talking for a little bit over an hour and 20 minutes. I don't want to take up any more of your time. You guys both had long days at work, so you guys should get some rest. But yeah, I think that's a good way to end it. It's big game week. It's time for the big game. One more message here in our Twitch channel. Give him the axe right in the neck. That is exactly what we want to happen this coming Friday. Friday game. Andy, you ready? You ready for some turkey sandwiches in the press box?
Let's go. I'm so ready. So ready.
Oh, man. Oh, I am so excited. Drew, for all the people that are listening or watching right now, where can they find you, either Twitter or elsewhere?
I am at DrewH_08 on Twitter. That's where you can find my Cal football takes.
Yes. So if you disagree with his takes, that's just at him. Don't at us, please. just at Drew, please. Don't at us. Andy, where can they find you?
Andy J beast mode sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Andy's not usually on the Twitters, but he will check because I always get the occasional liked alert from Andy J beast mode. You can find me.
What? Game days only.
Game days only.
I'm trying to limit it to. It's just game days only.
Hashtag game days only. You can find me at Rob11HWNG. You can find all of our written stuff at writeforcalifornia.com. You can find us on Twitter at Golden Bearcast. If you're watching on Twitch right now, that's twitch.tv/GoldenBearcast. Give us a follow there. We'd greatly appreciate it. And that's it. If you're already listening to us on podcast services, then I don't need to tell you where to find us on podcast services that you're already listening to. So with that, as always, go Bears.
Go Bears. Let's get that axe. Football is back in full swing. Kind of. Not really. Mainly not. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. Can we, and I ask you this, Rob, can we please see if BetOnline has odds on whether or not the game this week will be canceled due to COVID? We'll see. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert.